You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the end of the week. The 25th of July, the Friday, has come to an end, and finally breaking the six-day consecutive bearish streak, Nifty has ended in the green, but not by very much. But that is all stories from Dalal Street, which you have already heard on an evening walk down Dalal Street. This podcast is all about stories from outside of Dalal Street and indeed everywhere in the world. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and this is Stories of the Day right here on Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
But then again, let's start with some earnings news. Vodafone Idea has narrowed consolidated loss to 4,873.9 crore rupees in the June quarter. The company had registered a loss of 4,881.9 crore rupees in the fourth quarter of 2018-2019. The merger of Vodafone India and Idea Cellular, as we know, was completed on the 31st of August, and the numbers of June quarter are not comparable with those in the year-ago period. The revenue of Vodafone Idea for the June 2019 quarter fell to 11,269.9 crore rupees as against 11,775 crore rupees logged in the January to March quarter. Established operators like Bharti Airtel, Vodafone Idea are all in the midst of a bruising tariff war with Reliance Jio. As we know, Vodafone Idea said the first quarter revenue declined by 4.3% quarter on quarter due to churn of customers who recharged with service validity vouchers in the fourth quarter, as well as because of ARPU downtrading. In other earnings news, Maruti Suzuki, the country's largest automaker, has also shown profit declining 27.3% to 1,435 crore rupees, with revenue slipping 14%. Consolidated total revenue from operations stood at 19,732.6 crore rupees as against 22,470.8 crore rupees in the year-ago quarter. Analysts at Edelweiss had expected Maruti to report a 16% dip in revenues on a year-on-year basis, while net profit was seen slipping 38%. Maruti Suzuki's standalone net profit of 1,435 crore rupees for the June quarter, down 27.3% from the year-ago's 1,975.3 crore rupees. It should be noted here that the company had a high base of last year, both in terms of volume as well as margin. And regarding the auto sector, our edition of Digging Deeper today looks at the slump that the Indian auto sector is facing, so do be sure to listen to that as well. In more earnings news, we turn to Punjab National Bank, which reported a profit of 1,018.63 crore rupees for the quarter ended June, against a loss of 940 crore rupees registered in the corresponding quarter of the previous fiscal. Provisions and contingencies stood at 2,023.31 crore rupees, down 64.8% against 5,758.16 crore rupees logged in the year-ago period. Sequentially, the numbers dropped 79.9%. In the March quarter, figures stood at 10,071.11 crore rupees. This was clearly a positive surprise from Punjab National Bank, as several analysts had in fact projected a loss for the period. For example, Edelweiss had forecast PNB to report a loss of 905.8 crore rupees, and Philip Capital had estimated NII at 4,316.5 crore rupees, down 8% year on year. It had also predicted a loss of 1,006.9 crore rupees, but Punjab National Bank has pulled a fast one and has reported a profit of 1,019 crore rupees for the June quarter. And in the final piece of news about earnings, Bajaj Auto has reported a consolidated net profit at 1,012.17 crore rupees for the quarter ended June versus 1,115.2 crore rupees reported in the year-ago period. Consolidated total revenue from operations for the period under review stood at 7,756 crore rupees as against 7,627.9 crore rupees in the year-ago quarter. Analysts at Motilal Oswal had predicted a 2.1% year-on-year growth in revenue and a 2.8% decline in net profit. Well, some cow-related news now. Mint has reported that the 5G network will initially be used to monitor, cows. As the world readies itself for ultra-fast 5G networks to power driverless cars and remote surgeries and advanced robotics, etc., India's own twist with 5G is going to be brought on with cows. One of India's first 5G use case labs will be dedicated for monitoring cows and dairy development. A high-level government panel has decided on the 4th of July. The 5G Implementation Oversight Committee, which has representation from the DOT besides a few academics, had met on the 4th of July to review the recommendations of the 5G High-Level Forum, this according to the Mint report. DOT, which is finalizing India's roadmap for trials and commercial rollout of 5G, plans to set up the lab along with the Department of Science and Technology and the National Dairy Development Board. Mint has seen copies of the minutes of the meeting. Money Control has not been able to corroborate it. Another report on Mint tells us that India is putting the final shape on a plan to build at least 4 Tesla-style gigafactories to manufacture batteries with an investment of around $4 billion as India prepares to switch to electric vehicles to curb pollution and cut its dependence on foreign oil. A senior government official requesting anonymity said, and I quote, "We are moving ahead with the plan and a cabinet note for the same has been floated. Why should India import battery storage units when we have the largest market here?" Unquote. Aimed at securing India's energy needs, the plan to set up these factories of 10 gigawatt hours each is being helmed by federal policy think tank Niti Aayog and looks to accomplish what Tesla has done at its gigafactory in Nevada in the United States. Now, I've told you many times before about the Bimal Jalan report that has been postponed so many times, and now it appears that former Finance Secretary Subhash Chandra Garg has said he hadn't signed a report written by the committee reviewing the RBI economic capital framework because he said it's yet to be finalized. Garg, as we know, was moved as the Finance and Economic Affairs Secretary and was appointed the new Power Secretary. Garg said he had actually discussed with the Prime Minister's office his decision to take voluntary retirement on 18th of July, several days before he was made power secretary, according to a PTI report. Garg's refusal to sign a report written by Bimal Jalan created what is described as a peculiar situation for the rest of its members, this according to a report by Business Standard. The panel now sought the RBI's views on the way forward as Garg leaves the ministry. The Supreme Court today issued notice in the appeal filed by the Municipal Corporation of Greater Mumbai against the Bombay High Court order that quashed the CRZ, that is the Coastal Regulation Zone approval for the southern part of the BMC's 14,000 crore rupee coastal road project. Solicitor General Tushar Mehta and Senior Advocate Mukul Rohatgi, appearing for the appellants, appeared before the Supreme Court bench headed by CJI Ranjan Gogoi and comprising of Justice Deepak Gupta. The bench also refused to stay the Bombay Court order but issued the notice to the opposite parties on the plea for interim relief. The case will next be heard on the 20th of August. This is a setback for the government of Maharashtra as well as L&T and Hindustan Construction Company, who are the main affected parties in this coastal road project. The centre yesterday approved the construction of nearly 1.4 lakh more houses under the Pradhan Mantri Awas Yojana, taking the number of houses to be built under the scheme to over 85 lakh. In a statement issued in New Delhi, the Union Housing and Urban Affairs Ministry said the approval was given in the 45th meeting of the CSMC under the chairmanship of Durga Shankar Mishra. It stated that sanction was given for construction of around 1,40,134 more affordable houses for the benefit of the urban poor. Uttar Pradesh has about 54,277 houses, followed by West Bengal, and then Gujarat, Assam, Maharashtra, Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, and Haryana. In big news for Yes Bank, TPG Capital's Indian private equity firm and buyout firm Advent International are among the institutional investors that may infuse fresh capital into Yes Bank, according to a Mint report. While the amounts to be invested are currently being negotiated, the frontrunners TPG and Advent are most likely to invest around $350 million each. That's a total of $700 million. Yes Bank has met at least 76 firms, including several private equity funds, high net worth individuals and investment managers over the past 2 months to seek more funds. The price, the news of this emerging obviously made Yes Bank stock happy, which rose almost 9% by the end of the day. In other investment-related news, Shriram Transport is looking to raise $200 million. NCLT has approved Patanjali's 4,350 crore rupee revised bid for Ruchi Soya. Future Fashion's $250 million deal with Blackstone is also in the cards, according to report by the Economic Times. And CDPQ has pulled out of a road deal with SL. WhatsApp will roll out its payment services in India this year following a year-long pilot, its global chief Will Cathcart has said, as the Facebook-owned messaging giant taps an upsurge in digital payments in its dominant market, that is India. WhatsApp is everywhere in the country and data consumption is also surging by leaps and bounds thanks to cheap internet, which is of course a geo phenomenon. But a full launch of its payments feature had been delayed amid some false messages circulating on the platform that have led to mob lynching and more government scrutiny. The Menlo Park-based firm has also been trying to comply with Indian regulations, including data storage norms that require all payments-related data to be stored locally. So this is what has caused the delay in the rollout of WhatsApp payments, but it appears there is now a date for it to be rolled out, and that is going to be by the end of the year. Well, in the wake of Super 30 coming, there is some news emerging out of those coaching centers, and this time they want a lower GST rate. Representatives of several coaching institutes met with Union Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman yesterday and demanded to either remove the 18% GST on coaching centers or reduce it to the lowest tax slab. According to a report by Vandana Ramnani for Money Control, the centre is likely to propose the name of NBCC, that is National Buildings Construction Corporation, for completing the stalled projects of real estate major Unitech when the case comes up for hearing in the Supreme Court on the 29th of July. The government-run NBCC has already been tasked by the court to complete all pending projects of Amrapali Group, bringing relief to about 40,000 homebuyers. Turning to other news from the rest of the country, well, we start things off with Karnataka. BJP's B.S. Yediyurappa has taken oath as Karnataka Chief Minister for the fourth time. Perhaps it'll be fourth time lucky for him to finally complete a term. This, of course, comes 3 days after the coalition government led by H.D. Kumaraswamy failed a test of strength in the Vidhan Sabha. Yediyurappa was administered the oath by Governor Vajubhai Vala at the Raj Bhavan in Bangalore this evening. Yediyurappa still has to prove his majority by the 31st of July. But sources are saying that he may seek a trust vote before that on Monday. He told NDTV, and I'm quoting here, I'm 101% confident of getting the numbers. The BJP's move ends speculation that the party was playing it safe to secure its numbers in the assembly. In the meanwhile, ahead of being sworn in, Yediyurappa, who used to go by Yeddyurappa, has now brought it back to Yediyurappa, inserting an I instead of the double D. This is, of course, all related to numerology and other such scientific things, I'm guessing. Samajwadi Party lawmaker Azam Khan will be asked to furnish his unconditional apology in Parliament on Monday for the sexist comments that he made, which were condemned by lawmakers across political lines today. Parliamentary Affairs Minister Prahlad Joshi said after a meeting, if he doesn't apologize, the Speaker has been authorized to take action against him. The Speaker called the meeting after several lawmakers, including ministers and Mayawati, expressed outrage over Azam Khan's comments. This is an abominable act. I appeal to you for exemplary action, were the words of the highest-ranking female minister in the cabinet, Nirmala Sitharaman. Azam Khan had made these remarks during a debate yesterday when BJP lawmaker Rama Devi, officiating as speaker, asked him to address the chair while making his point. He responded with comments that were so offensive that shouts of shame erupted in the house. He started things off with idhar udhar baate karne ka, etc. And then the chair, Rama Devi, who is the deputy speaker from the BJP, said idhar udhar mat dekhiye, idhar dekhiye, referring, of course, to the fact that she's the chair in the Lok Sabha at that point in time. And he sort of started waxing poetic, saying, aap itni achhi hai, main toh, meri aankhe apne aapke aankhon se milke, some nonsense of that sort. And clearly, that was enough for the parliament to rise in cries of shame. Akhilesh Yadav came to his defense, saying there was no ill will meant in those comments. But then again, the condemnation from everywhere across the political aisle was so severe that he's now been asked to give a formal apology on Monday. But Thursday was a big day for the Modi government because it ensured the passage of the triple talaq bill in the Lok Sabha. Its bigger win was, of course, managing the numbers in the Rajya Sabha to get the amendments to the Right to Information Law, that is RTI law, passed amid protests from the opposition. The government also extended the duration of the ongoing parliament session, earlier scheduled to end on Friday. Now it will go on all the way till the 7th of August. Thursday was an occasion, a rare one in the Rajya Sabha in the last 6 years, that the government defeated an opposition resolution. The BJP-led NDA hopes to cross the majority mark by mid-next year, but Thursday's victory gave us a look into what the strategy going forward in the House may be until then. Meanwhile, 17 opposition parties have written to the Rajya Sabha chairman today, raising concerns over the hurried passage of bills in Parliament without any scrutiny, and said that this was a departure from established practice. The letter has been signed by leaders of 17 parties, including the Congress, Samajwadi Party, Trinamool Congress, Bahujan Samaj Party, Rashtriya Janata Dal, Telugu Desam Party, Communist Party of India and the CPIM. It said that in the 14th Lok Sabha, 60% of bills were sent for scrutiny to parliamentary committees, while in the 15th, 71% of bills were sent for scrutiny. But the letter went on to say, in the 16th Lok Sabha, only 26% of bills were sent for scrutiny. Meanwhile, Payal Tarvi's suicide note has come out in public and has shed light on her thoughts prior to her death. The 26-year-old second-year postgraduate medical student at the BYL Nair Hospital allegedly committed suicide in her hostel room on the 22nd of May. The forensic department recovered this suicide note on the 6th of July. Payal Tarvi's mentioned the name of the three accused, that is Hema Ahuja, Bhakti Mehre and Ankita Khandelwal, in her note. The three doctors allegedly harassed and taunted her on her caste. The note said, and I quote, "I have taken this decision after trying out everything. I found out that no one is there to stand for us, support us in this department. I have lost my professional and personal life because it has been declared by them that they will not let me learn anything till they're here in Nair," unquote. She also went on to say that she holds Hema Ahuja, Bhakti Meher and Ankita Khandelwal responsible for her condition, as well as that of Snehal Shinde, who is a colleague and friend of hers. In the note, she said, and I quote, "I literally do not see any way. For the last 1 year, we have been bearing them, hoping that one day this will end. But now I can only see the end. There is no way out of it. The trio used to call me dumb and Tarvi oversmart and used to make fun of us," Snehal said in her statement. Snehal being the colleague and friend of Payal Tarvi. In another disturbing incident of violence by man, a disturbing video has emerged from Uttar Pradesh in the Pilibhit district showing an adult tigress being beaten relentlessly with sticks by people this week, and it has triggered widespread outrage. The incident took place under a protected zone of the Pilibhit Tiger Reserve, about 240 kilometers from the capital city of Lucknow. The mobile video, shot by a resident of a village close by, captures the assault by the villagers and even has background commentary by a witness who says they're assaulting the tigress because she had attacked and injured a villager in the morning. The tigress is about 6 years old and she died of broken ribs and injuries to her body. Turning very quickly to news from elsewhere, from the United States specifically, which is where I am right now, US stock futures are pointing to a modestly higher Wall Street open this morning following a Thursday slide that saw both the Dow and Nasdaq post their biggest one-day losses in a month. The Dow also closed at a two-week low. Despite all this, the Dow is just below break-even for the week, and the S&P 500 and Nasdaq remain on track for their third positive week in 4 weeks. On the corporate front, Dow component McDonald's and Twitter are among those companies reporting quarterly earnings today, along with AbbVie, Colgate-Palmolive, Goodyear and Philips 66. The Trump administration news now. It has outlined the details of a $16 billion aid package for farmers damaged by bad weather and the U.S. trade war with China. The U.S. Department of Agriculture program includes $14.5 billion in direct payments to farmers for a range of crops. Sign-ups for aid start Monday, while payments begin next month. Meanwhile, the Justice Department of the administration is pushing state officials to support T-Mobile's merger with Sprint through the selling of assets to Dish Network, according to this report by the Wall Street Journal. The discussions come in response to some of the state attorneys general who have already filed a federal antitrust suit seeking to block the more than $26 billion merger. Meanwhile, you didn't hear from me yesterday, which is why let me just give you a quick summary of what happened with Robert Mueller's testifying in before the Congress. Trump, his Republican allies, and even many Democratic pundits declared Mueller's narrow conservative testimony a bust. But that is not the point of that testimony. The former FBI director declined to answer several questions and deferred many more to his report, which he had already dubbed his testimony months ago. Yet, it wasn't quite the good day that Trump said it was going to be, because Mueller pointedly said that the investigation did not exonerate Trump on the question of obstruction of justice and that the president could be indicted after he leaves office. Mueller also said problematic is an understatement when it comes to describing Trump's public celebration of WikiLeaks. Well, what's happening on the other side of the aisle? House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are meeting today after weeks of tensions between the two Democrats. As we know, AOC and Pelosi have been at it, considering AOC had asked Nancy Pelosi to be a little more mindful before admonishing women of color who are also representatives in the U.S. House of Congress. The two, somehow, were recently unified because they have a common enemy. And Donald Trump, this common enemy, had taken shots at four Congress women, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and AOC, women of color, when he asked them to go back to where they came from. They come from the United States, just for the record. And now their united hatred of Donald Trump has united them in that they will be meeting today to hash out some problems. Meanwhile, executives at Wall Street's biggest banks have begun throwing their weight to some early favorites in the 2020 Democratic presidential field. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and, surprisingly, Pete Buttigieg. All three candidates combined are to receive contributions during the second quarter from at least 15 bank executives, including from those at Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. SoftBank has announced today its second mega fund to invest into technology companies developing artificial intelligence technologies around the world. Prominent corporations which are expected to participate in this Vision Fund 2 include Apple, Microsoft, Foxconn, Standard Chartered Bank, and a few Japanese financial giants. Meanwhile, Apple has agreed to buy the majority of Intel's smartphone modem division. Some 2,200 Intel employees will now be joining Apple, according to this announcement. Apple paid about $1 billion for staff, intellectual property, and other equipment from Intel. The deal is expected to close in the fourth quarter of 2019, this according to a report on CNBC. Meanwhile, Amazon's cloud business jumped 37% from this time last year, but has seen its biggest slowdown in more than 5 years, missing analyst estimates. This quarter, AWS comprised of more than two-thirds of Amazon's operating income, but fell short of the $8.5 billion mark that Wall Street had wanted to see. This could largely also be because Microsoft's Azure, which is its cloud business, is nipping at the heels of Amazon. What else do you absolutely know? The US has reported second quarter GDP data. Boeing's 737 MAX crisis may have dented this quarter's economic growth as slowing production of the grounded plane impacts airlines as well as suppliers. Meanwhile, considering all the troubles that Huawei is facing in the United States, it has gone 5G in the UK. The launch of the Mate 20X 5G, which is Huawei's first commercially available 5G phone, had been postponed in Britain after the US barred its firms from supplying to the company in May. The jury is, of course, still out as to whether Huawei will be allowed to build Britain's 5G network, but as of now, the launch of Mate 20X 5G has happened in the United Kingdom. Meanwhile, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China will join Iran in Vienna on Sunday in an attempt to salvage the 2015 deal to curtail Iran's nuclear program in exchange for lifting sanctions. The US, of course, as we know, famously pulled out of the deal last year because, well, it was an Obama plan and all Trump wants to do is undo Obama's things, and Iran was one of them, and the US pulled out. It set the stage for increased tensions with Iran because Iran then went on to say, we will enrich as much uranium as we want to, and of course, there was also the possibility of war between the two countries. And now these other countries who are also part of the deal will meet with Iran on Sunday in Vienna. Shares of Google parent company Alphabet popped over 7% in after-hours trading yesterday after the company crushed second-quarter estimations, while Amazon slid because of its slowdown in cloud computing business, like I told you earlier. Meanwhile, in some East Asia news, Kim Jong-un said yesterday's missile tests were aimed at South Korean warmongers. The North Korean leader watched the tests of two short-range missiles seen as a signal of Pyongyang's frustration over stalled denuclearization talks with the United States and U.S.-South Korean military exercises. Meanwhile, ties between Japan and South Korea have also worsened, according to a report by Kyodo News of Japan, which says that Tokyo plans to remove South Korea from a list of favored trading partners next week after earlier restricting key high-tech exports to the country. The trade tiff has its roots in South Korean courts' efforts to order compensation from Japanese companies for using Koreans as forced labor during, well, World War II. Basically, there's lots of things going on in East Asia and many people not happy with each other. And finally, the long list for the world's most anticipated literary prize has been announced. The Booker Prize Foundation revealed the long list for its award on Tuesday, with Margaret Atwood, Salman Rushdie, Valeria Luiselli, and Jeanette Winterson among those nominated. 13 books are in contention, and finally, it is awarded to a novel written in English and published in Britain or Ireland. Novels making this year's long list include The Testament, which is Margaret Atwood's sequel to her iconic Handmaid's Tale. Atwood has, of course, been shortlisted for the Booker 5 times, winning it once in the year 2000 for The Blind Assassin. The Testaments will be published in the US on the 10th of September. Returning to the list of Booker nominees is Rushdie, who is, of course, a Booker favorite, and this time he's been nominated for Quixote, an homage to Cervantes's Don Quixote, and that is going to be released in US on the 3rd of September. He's, of course, no stranger to the Booker roster. Midnight's Children won him a Booker, and eventually a special one, Booker of Bookers, in 1993, winning the award from a pile of 25 Booker winners. Mexican writer Luiselli has been nominated for Long Lost Children Archive, which is, of course, a book that deals with the issues of immigration to the United States. Some other books that have been nominated: Deborah Levy for The Man Who Saw Everything, Max Porter for Lanny, Jeanette Winterson for Frankenstein. And finally, a quick look at what happened on Dalal Street. The BSE Sensex rose 51 points to close at 37,882, and the Nifty 50 ended at 11,284. Top Sensex gainers today, Yes Bank and Bajaj Finance and Hero Motor Corp, while top losers today were Reliance Industries, ONGC, Tech Mahindra and HDFC. Well, that's it from this day and indeed the week. Do be sure to listen to our podcast on the crisis in the Indian auto sector. And he's hoping that all of you have a fantastic weekend. I'll, of course, see you first thing in the morning on Monday. Until then, do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. And yes, I'm back. I was away for a day and now reporting to you from the United States of America. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick. And you've been listening to Money Control.